I'd like to call this meeting of the House Transportation Committee to order. It is currently 1:04 p.m. on Thursday, February 19th, 2026, here in room 124. Members present today are Representative St. Clair, Representative Nelson, Representative McCabe, Representative Mina, Co-Chair Representative Eichheit, and myself, Representative Carrick. Let the record reflect we have a quorum to conduct business. Please take this time to silence your cell phones during the meeting. Before we begin, I'd like to thank Jordan Nicholson from House Records and Chloe Miller from the Juno LIO for staffing our committee today. Our committee aide today is Griffin Sukeu, and today we would normally be joined by Meredith Trainer, also from my co-chair's office. Thank you to our committee aides and staff for your help. On today's agenda, we are bringing back House Bill 217 on autonomous vehicles by the House Transportation Committee. This is a reintroduction and will include invited testimony. Just as a reminder, we had this bill up for a first hearing last session on May 8th, so we'll take a little bit of time with this legislation, as I know a couple of members are brand new to it. Afterwards, we have a first hearing on House Bill 303 on motor vehicle registration from Representative St. Clair. And with that, I'd like to invite my staff, Griffin Sukeu, to walk us through the sponsor statements and sectional before we move to our two invited testifiers today. And I'd also like to recognize, before we begin, that Representative Stutz has joined us at 106. And we're also joined in the room by Senator Myers. Welcome.
Through the chair, for the record, my name is Griffin Sukeu, staff to Representative Carrick and the House Transportation Committee. If it pleases the chair, my intent is to go through the sponsor statement, sectional, and then answer some of the questions that came up during last year's hearing.
Awesome. Please proceed.
Thank you. For the record, Griffin Sukeu, the sponsor statement is as follows. House Bill 217 seeks to regulate the use of autonomous vehicles and to provide specific requirements for autonomous vehicles, vehicle use as it relates to interstate commerce, goods, and passengers. As autonomous vehicles are increasingly contemplated for and used in shipping and product delivery, new laws around their use and related liability will provide critical guardrails for keeping drivers, pedestrians, and other road users safe. This bill establishes legal definitions for autonomous technology being used in vehicles, sets parameters for owners and user liability in the case of an accident, and establishes requirements for use as it relates to interstate commerce, goods, and passenger transport, and establishes an effective date. The sectional is as follows. Section 1 amends AS28.90 by adding a new section that requires that an autonomous vehicle in Alaska must meet federal standards and regulations for a motor vehicle operated on public highways. Subsection B, an autonomous vehicle registered in the state must not be engaged in the transport of interstate commerce, goods, or passengers unless the transport is for personal, non-commercial use, or a human safety operator is physically present in the vehicle and can intervene if necessary. Subsection C, a human safety operator must meet federal and state requirements for operating autonomous and non-autonomous vehicles. Subsection D sets up the order of liability in case of an accident involving an autonomous vehicle. Damages will first be recovered from the human safety operator, then the modifier of the vehicle, then the programmer of the vehicle software, and then finally the manufacturer. Subsection E is our definition section, and there's quite a few, and I'm happy to walk through that if that is the will of the committee.
I think we can probably pause here, and then as those definitions come up, if folks have questions, we can ask them. Do we have questions from the committee before we go to invited testifiers? Representative St. Clair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, in your sectional, you stated it has to be in accordance with or federal standards. Let me find out exactly where... Federal standards. Are those federal standards established? Do we know what they are? Are they pending?
Through the chair, for the record, Griffin Sukeo. Great question, Representative St. Clair. From what I've found, there's different layers of these requirements based on the type of autonomous vehicle, because there's, you know, there's lane assist versus the car's driving itself. So I believe yes to that. There are specific regulations out there already from the federal government, but I can get back to the committee with what those are.
Thank you.
Do we have any additional questions at this time? Mr. Sukeo.
Through the chair, I just have some questions from last year that came up. Would it be okay for me to go through the answers?
Yes, let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll go to invited testimony and open it up for questions after that.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, Griffin Sukeo. Last year, there were some really good questions that came out of this committee. Representative McCabe had asked if this legislation would affect drones. From what I found, drones are defined in Section 18.65.909 as unmanned aircraft systems. And since this bill is defining autonomous vehicles as a separate entity, I don't think it would affect drone use. Former Representative, now Senator Tilton, had mentioned that her son has a Tesla with the ability to self-park and was curious if this legislation would outlaw that. On page 1, line 9, it exempts autonomous vehicles that are used for personal use, non-commercial use, from being affected by this legislation. Furthermore, in the definitions of this bill, it says that, quote, or other systems that enhance safety or provide the driver assistance that are not capable singularly or collectively of driving the vehicle without active control or monitoring of a human safety operator. Through looking at Tesla's regulations of its own vehicles, they require that the driver stay alert and be prepared to immediately take control of the vehicle during auto park and other similar systems. So my understanding is that due to the aforementioned reasons, Senator Tilton's son's car would be exempt from this legislation.
Great. I had forgotten those were questions, so that's a good walkthrough of what was asked. Let's turn now to our invited testifiers, and we will potentially bring you back up for additional questions on the bill. First in the room, we have Patrick Fitzgerald with the Teamsters Local 959, and we're going to have invited testifiers, if possible, try to stick to a 5-minute or so presentation.
Absolutely. For the record, my name is Patrick Fitzgerald. I'm the political coordinator for Teamsters Local 959. Good afternoon, House Transportation Committee. I wanted to thank the Transportation Committee for sponsoring House Bill 217, the Autonomous Vehicles Act. Also want to thank Chair Carrick and Chair Aishai and their staff for going through the sectional analysis as well as the sponsor statement and answering questions from last year. As we reviewed, House Bill 217 does nothing to restrict the autonomous vehicles being used for private use. The intent of this bill is to make sure that there's a safety operator in a vehicle that has autonomous capabilities for any sort of commercial use. In the last 10 years, we've seen a rapid advancement in technology of self-driving and autonomous vehicles. This has led to an increased safety risk on the road, liability issues, and job loss. However, House Bill 217 would offer a solution to many of those concerns. It is the best interest of the safety of Alaskans on the roadways and for job protection that we establish a requirement for autonomous vehicles to have a safety operator behind the wheel and safe driving in vehicles with self-driving capability for commercial use. And we urge you to please pass House Bill 217.
Okay, thank you. Short and to the point.
Yep.
If you'd like to stay in the room, we're going to go through our second invited testifier and then open it up for discussion. It's my understanding online we have Kurt Augustine calling in from Sacramento, California, with the Automotive Innovation the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Mr. Augustine, if you'd like to put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Chairs. Hi, my name is Kurt Augustine, and I'm Senior Director of State Affairs for the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. The Alliance is the major trade association of the auto industry, representing virtually all major manufacturers, as well as autonomous vehicle technology providers, electric vehicle battery companies, and all sorts of traditional auto parts companies. We appreciate the opportunity to present today. But we have significant concerns with HB 217. And most troubling are the provisions that dramatically limit the use of autonomous vehicle technology. But our primary concerns are a couple, and I'll highlight those. Of our most significant concern is that a requirement that a human operator be physically present in the vehicle at all times for commercial purposes, or recognize that. The mandating of an in-vehicle operator is essentially counter to the entire concept of autonomous vehicle technology, and it, if passed, would essentially be a de facto ban on AVs in Alaska. This would dramatically stifle many of the benefits that autonomous vehicle technology promises, and things that are somewhat unique to Alaska, but also in many other states. There are a lot of benefits in serving underserved areas that are more remote, that it is costly and inefficient to deliver goods to people's homes and transporting them as passengers. Also, there are significant advantages to folks who are disabled that are not able to drive themselves. They're not be able to get home shopping, etc., available to them. So we have those significant concerns about the limiting. But also, there are some technical issues that are very important. The bill does not recognize any of the national safety and design standards. There are rules, as were presented in the committee, and that is true. But I'm specifically speaking about the Society of Automotive Engineers design standards. And there's no definition of corresponding with what is the national standards in all of our states, and having a different undefined set of technology as this bill does will just create a lot of confusion in the state on what is and what isn't available. Also, we have significant problems with the presumption of liability, that in all events, the autonomous vehicle as a fault, if there's an accident, this is not a legal precedent in any state. This would be completely new. There's really no basis for it to make an automatic assumption that one party is automatically at fault. And then finally, we'd rather ask you to consider not adopting this bill, because it really would put Alaska behind in developing all sorts of technology and ancillary things. Legislation like this has been considered all over the country, and it is yet to pass neither in red nor blue states, and we would ask that you hold the bill and work with the autonomous vehicle industry to provide standards that are comfortable for state policymakers and ensure that Alaska's roads stay safe. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you, Mr. Augustine. And if you also would like to stay on the line, I think we may have questions. Do we have opening questions from the committee? Representative McCabe.
Thanks. Do we have any more invited testimony?
We do not. So that exhausts our invited testimony today.
So I'm a little curious why we don't have them online, but our own DOT has a modernization and innovative office that would be really curious to hear from them, since they're closest to us. They kind of know our roads and they know the things that will affect an autonomous vehicle, such as wintertime and striping and those kinds of things. So it would be really cool if we could get them, if we're going to do anything more with this bill, I'd really like to hear from them.
We will, to your point, Representative McCabe, we will make sure that they are explicitly invited for the next hearing. Our DOT folks are in D.C. this week, and so they're just not available to be present for these hearings.
Thanks. And one more thing, Madam Chair. So drones are autonomous vehicles. I can launch my drone from my porch and not touch it until it comes back and send it out to a GPS point and at a certain altitude and never even touch it. So I'm suggesting that maybe the definitions in this need to be tightened up, if I'm not, whether it be road vehicles or at least get rid of the or somehow filter out the drones, because I think the FAA would not be happy if we were trying to regulate drones.
Also, to Representative McCabe, fair point. I believe we had some guidance that they're not included in the scope of this legislation, but we can try to get even more clarity on that. Because the intention is not to regulate drones with this bill. I have a question for Mr. Augustine, who's online. I saw the letter in opposition to the bill, and I just had a couple of questions on this first page here. So it says that in the second paragraph, AVIA, Automotive Vehicle Industry Association, is comprised of the world's leading technology, ride-sharing, trucking, and automotive companies. And it later says on the same page that this bill would cause Alaska to fall behind other states on AV innovation. Alaska's pretty unique from most other states. We're disconnected from the contiguous lower 48. We're often a bit technologically behind through no fault of our own. So I just wanted your perspective. What specific innovations is Alaska currently undertaking on AV innovation? And also, if you could describe a bit more about what member companies comprise AVIA.
Yes, Madam Chair. Now, first off, I do not represent the AVIA organization. I can address some of, I can answer some of your questions, but I need to have them fully answer everything. On their broad membership includes some of the member companies of automakers that are in my association. But they also have several other companies like Waymo and a couple AV companies that are in both, like Zoox and Neuro, which are in both of our organizations. So they, while we represent a more broader perspective, the auto industry, AVIA represents specifically companies that are devoted solely to autonomous vehicles in terms of issues they represent. In some of the technology that we see that is going to be denied, the process is still being tested. There are, like, if any technologies, there are new improvements going on right now. There, many of our member companies are using smaller vehicles for delivery services that do not even have passenger. I mean, there literally is no passenger compartment. They are nothing but delivery vehicles. Those type of things that are being tested around the country would not be allowed in the state. And all the support staffs that go with the testing and implementation of these products wouldn't come to Alaska. So it's those type of opportunities that would, not only for the consumers of these products, but the actual developers just wouldn't come to Alaska because they, frankly, would be banned from doing so.
I have a follow-up, but I'm going to take a minute to kind of figure out exactly what I want to ask. I'll go to Co-Chair Eichheit and then Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. This is for Mr. Augustine. Thank you for joining us today. As I was listening to your testimony, sir, there was two things that stood out, so I guess I have two questions. The first one is, my notes, you said disabled folks would be impacted by this bill. Can you elaborate on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I'd be happy to. Working with partner organizations like the National Federation of the Blind and et cetera, there are a couple of issues. One, of course, is the very obvious that folks who have lost their sight cannot drive. This would autonomous vehicle technology opens the world up for them to go to places that they're currently can't do. But also, they had told somebody that I hadn't really thought of, but a lot of things that for shopping and goods that they need can't not be necessarily delivered in traditional ways, and they really see this type of technology being able to provide them the benefits of receiving the. Receiving those goods where they may not be able to go out in themselves and do it. And then especially folks who are in more rural areas, that's kind of a double benefit for both disabled people and folks who live further out from urban areas.
Follow up? Yeah, thank you, sir. My understanding was this does not regulate autonomous vehicles for personal use. This is commercial use, and even though I don't know how to say this, so I won't. But I'll go to my second question.
I even bring it up.
I wanted to say it, but I won't. The second one is you were talking about liability and that this bill would cause some liability. And on page 2, line 1, as I read the bill, the liability is the safety operator, the human safety operator that's on board, that is the first line of liability for any issues. Do you want to comment on that, please?
Yes, and I'll first comment on your unasked question about the not personnel issue. Absolutely. Yes, the bill is quite explicit. This is not for to affect personnel issues. But many individuals will not in the foreseeable future have autonomous vehicles as their personal vehicles. And so they will be denied the more fleet services that would be allowing them to be hauled up and transported. So that's kind of the difference where, personal vehicles, again, may not be out on the roads all that much that often. In terms of,
yes, liability, sir.
Yes, so it addresses. Thank you on that bill. I mean, it assumes immediately that the human safety operator is at fault for any accident. Well, that's not the way our legal system works. I mean, their determination has that no one is assumed to be guilty just by being the human safety operator or a driver of a vehicle. If there are two, if you and I were out on the road together and we got in an accident, one of us is not assumed automatic liability. That liability occurs after the investigation. So that's the type of presumed liability that I was speaking to that is a problem with the bill.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Augustine. This may be due to my inattentiveness, but I didn't hear you say what organization you represent.
Through the chair, I represent the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. We are the trade association representing most auto manufacturers, as well as many autonomous vehicle technology companies, traditional auto parts companies, EV battery companies, a pretty wide swath of the auto industry.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I do have a question, but I'm sort of reminded of the cartoon of the first autonomous airline, because I'm an airline pilot, or was, where the pilot's sitting in the very front seat with his dog next to him. And somebody said, well, there's the safety pilot. What's the dog for? And the answer is, well, the dog's there to bite the pilot if he tries to get in the cockpit, right? So, but my question is, I think, to Mr. Augustine, is there are some states that are allowing this, Texas, California, others, but they seem to have a lane for fully autonomous vehicles. Is that a completely separate lane, or is that one that just has a sign that says, hey, if you enter this lane, there might be autonomous vehicles in there? So, in other words, my question kind of centers around Alaska, where we struggle to build any kind of road, let alone a third lane for strictly autonomous vehicles. So I'm kind of curious if we would have to build a separate lane strictly for autonomous trucks.
Through the chair, thank you for the question. No, you do not have to have a separate lane. That tends to be in very urban areas where there's a lot of pedestrians, so that people are more aware. But the autonomous vehicles are able to go on any traditional road that's in place right now.
Thank you.
Thank you. I had put myself in the queue, and then I also have Representative Mina. So I wanted to go back to this question about jobs, and I understand you're not with the AVIA here today, Mr. Augustine, but the letter we have and your testimony suggests that we could actually see an increase in jobs if we fully support the autonomous vehicle industry in Alaska, and yet it's my understanding that Waymo, to give an example, is one, not actually the subject of this bill, because page one, line eight, limits this legislation to interstate driving, so deliveries of groceries and other services are not impacted. But also, secondly, Waymo is one example, but some of these companies are currently outsourcing their remote assistance operators to other countries. And so can you provide some more information about how the autonomous vehicle industry supports jobs in Alaska?
I can to some degree. Again, like I said, this is I represent less of the trucking aspect of it and more of the passenger and small goods aspect of it. But to some, and certainly we'll ask the vehicle folks to follow up with you, but let's say where we see the jobs happening are when the vehicles are in place, they're traditional, vehicles need to be repaired, there's a lot of the testing and technology jobs that are done. Also, there are many jobs you wouldn't think about in terms of the vehicle with some commerce rolls up. Somebody still has to load all those, especially at non-traditional, like grocery stores and places like that that will be using autonomous vehicles for deliveries. They will have to have staff that will actually load those kind of things. So there's kind of a wide range from high-tech folks who will be helping develop and program the on-site vehicles, all the way to service technicians and folks who are actually handling the goods. And as I said, I can certainly have the folks expand on that as well for you.
Yeah, I guess as a follow-up, Mr. Augustine, I would like an expansion because you currently have to have people to load vehicles, and then you also have to have people to drive vehicles. And I would just note that it would also be good to see some follow-up on states with, you know, a higher incidence of adverse weather conditions. Alaska interstate commerce has a pretty tricky thing. We have some roads that are in some pretty desperate need of repair and maintenance, and I just haven't heard yet in this conversation how the Alliance approaches some of those potential challenges. I'm going to turn now to Representative Mina.
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. To the bill sponsor, I'm just trying to understand the different vehicles that this impacts. So I've seen the videos of those sidewalk delivery robots that people are harassing in Chicago and other places. But those sidewalk robots, that's an autonomous vehicle, correct?
I'm going to have Mr. Fitzgerald. I'm seeing that he's feeling ready to answer that question.
You've seen the wheelchairs in Seattle Airport?
Oh. Really cool.
Patrick Fitzgerald through the chair to Representative Mina. It's the intent that since there is not the capacity for those little robots to be driven by a person, that they would not be included. This might kind of get into a definition issue that we need to run through alleged legal, but it is the idea is if there is the capacity for someone to operate behind the wheel of a vehicle that's autonomous, then there is, should be a safety operator in there. So, and I haven't physically seen one of those little robots in the lower 48 that deliver food and all that stuff, but it doesn't look like that there is the possibility of a human being able to operate and steer.
Okay. And then follow up.
Through
the co-chair, my understanding is that this bill is only specific to transport of interstate commerce goods or passengers. So even if the little sidewalk robots are included, this wouldn't qualify under the bill unless the robot traveled over the Canadian border?
To Representative Mina, I don't believe we can get some better clarification that those little robots would be the subject of this bill because, again, on page 1, line 7 and 8, an autonomous vehicle registered in the state can't be engaged in transport of interstate commerce, goods, or passengers. And then there's a couple of exceptions to that, but we're specifically looking at interstate commerce. And I think for a couple of different reasons, that type of autonomous vehicle is not the subject of this bill.
Just a quick follow-up through the co-chair, a comment. Yeah, I think it would be good to just have that clarification in the bill so we know that it doesn't apply to the little robots.
Through the chair, Patrick Fitzgerald, Representative Mina, absolutely. I'm not sure if we even have a definition of what those little robots would be currently, but I'm happy to follow up with the bill sponsors and give you a response for that.
Thank you.
How about a bill to define e-bikes and little robots?
Tell them that those wheelchairs in the Seattle airport, they could hold a passenger.
They have a definition in our statute. Yeah. I actually know a little bit about that from the e-bike bill. Do we have additional questions on this bill? Representative McCabe.
Thanks. I'm curious why there is no fiscal note. I don't know if that's from the bill sponsor or if we can expect a fiscal note or if there should be a fiscal note or... Is this going to cost us money? One more, just kind of a comment. I visited the Vancouver Freight Terminal a year ago, and they had just converted to fully autonomous everything. And the struggle that they had was the same struggle we're having, is losing jobs, right? I mean, nobody wants to cut a bunch of jobs, and they actually gained jobs, according to the not only the union guy that was there, but the head guy said, yeah, we gained tech jobs, so we put drivers from these cars into operating the computers and the robots and everything else that had to operate the whole system. So, it was kind of an eye opener for me. It's very interesting, regardless of where you come down on the job portion of it, it's really interesting to watch the technology. And the first fully automatic airplane with no pilots on board, nobody will fly on it.
Yeah, and I guess I'll follow up on that, Representative McCabe. To Mr. Augustine, I'm just genuinely curious about how the passage of, or not passing this legislation and having autonomous vehicles coming to Alaska can create jobs. I'm not seeing that from what's been said so far. So not just keeping jobs that we have, but increasing them. So I'm really curious about how that can be possible. And perhaps I think that follow-up will be very interesting. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're not the co-chair anymore. The other co-chair left. So thank you, Madam Chair. To kind of go off of what Rep. Mina was, it's kind of the same thing. It says interstate commerce, and my understanding of interstate is from when I was in Idaho, and it was one state butted up to another. So is commercial traffic from Canada to Alaska, is that considered interstate in this bill?
Yes.
Okay. And then I follow up.
Follow-up.
Thank you. In the letter from AVIA, their first point was that it would impose a permanent ban. And I recognize that that's not the language, but And that's the reality, is that if there's a it would essentially make the point of autonomous vehicles uneconomical. It would just defeat the point in general. And I also share some of the same concerns as Representative McCabe with commercial vehicles, specifically with industry. And so my question is, like, you know, the reality of technology and advancement, when the examples are brought up of helping people with disabilities or getting groceries, like, I recognize that's a reality in a lot of places. It's really not a reality up here in Alaska yet. But the way, as fast as technology is advancing, I would have never believed as a kid that, you know, I'd be sitting here today debating on autonomous vehicles. And so my concern is that this will preclude, or will the way that it's set up right now, it will essentially eliminate the opportunity to have this type of efficiency in, you know, years down the road. That's a concern that I have in reading it. I mean, like, I think that when we go through statutes, I guess this is a comment, so I apologize, but I've been looking at this a lot too, and so I think a lot of the things that my concerns are, like with industry, can be considered under Section 28.10.011 on vehicles that are exempt from registration. However, I think that there's some gaps, specifically with industrial vehicles. Used, I mean, like, industrial vehicles is a broad term, I think the same as commercial vehicles, that this just is a threat to. So actually, one actual question to the, if I may. So what is the definition of a commercial vehicle?
I think that would be a potentially good question for, I'm seeing Senator Myers is willing to answer that question. Senator Myers is carrying companion legislation in the other body, so I feel comfortable asking him to come up if he'd like.
Yeah.
Has a license plate on the front bumper instead of the back. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Robert Myers, Senator for District Q, and yes, I'm carrying SB 148, which is a companion piece on the Senate side. Representative McCabe is referencing a way that we went about commercial vehicles in a bill a couple of years ago. So through the chair to Representative Nelson. So the definition of commercial vehicle is relatively straightforward. There's two definitions in the statute. One definition just means you're using a vehicle in the process of conducting business. That is not the version we're using here. This definition is much tighter. It's come from the federal government. What it says is, if you're a cargo carrying vehicle, you are over 10,000 pounds gross vehicle weight rating. If you are passenger vehicle, you can carry more than 16 passengers. So pretty straightforward. If there's anything else that the chair would like me to address, I'm happy to. As most folks in here already know, I am a commercial vehicle operator on a regular basis, so that's part of the reason that I'm interested in the bill.
Yeah, if you want to stay in the hot seat. Do we have additional questions for any of our testifiers or Senator Myers while I have him? Sure. Representative Nelson?
Yeah, just a follow-up. That's actually – thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Through the chair. That's actually very helpful, and that specific language that you said there. It would be nice to see that in the bill. I don't know how that's possible, but it would be nice to see that actual definition.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks, and I didn't read this maybe as close as I should have, but I do know that there is, and through the chair, Senator Myers, I do know that there is very tight regulations for duty time for drivers, for the amount of time you can be behind the wheel. Most trucks have cameras in them focused on the driver, on his face, to see if he's sleeping. There's also sleep study requirements for doctors for drivers with over a certain body mass and weight, making sure that they get rested. So point being, can the safety operator just go to sleep?
Through the chair to Representative McCabe, that is something that might happen. And to the forgetting his name, but the gentleman from the Technology Association's point, in what we are doing in this bill does not get rid of the point of autonomous vehicles for that very reason, because one of the reasons that that technology is useful is because, hey, it can, you know, whether it means wake the driver up or it means it can take over in case the driver is being is drowsy and needs to pull over, or, you know, maybe you can program it so that the vehicle then pulls, can detect that the driver's fallen asleep and will then pull over at the next available spot. These are places where the technology still is useful in a safety capacity. And what we're just trying to say is you can't just let it go out on its own on autopilot. To your point about, you know, a plane on autopilot, you know, planes got plenty of autopilot. You know, they've even got the auto lander going these days. And what we're trying to say is that doesn't mean you can take the operator out. The operator still needs to be there for these very large vehicles. There's still plenty of opportunity within the personal vehicle side of things for innovation, for small deliveries, you know, delivering groceries or, you know, getting your Chinese takeout or what have you. Lots of innovation there, but the safety factor goes up when you start talking about a commercial vehicle where you're talking thousands of pounds, or in the case of a passenger vehicle with, you know, 40 or 50 people on board. That's how I got started in commercial driving myself, as I was driving tour bus. So, you know, I'm not seeing that as a detriment, the scenario you're saying. I'm seeing that as a benefit. This is a backup for in case there's a problem with the human operator.
Follow up.
Thanks. Yeah, so I see that actually now looking at it. I see that you have to be physically present and have the ability to monitor and intervene. And it also says that you must meet federal and state requirements, so I assume that's all the health, CPAP, sleep, all of that sort of thing. But I don't see anything in here where it says it could extend the duty time. So say this bill didn't pass or say it did pass and somebody actually wanted to come to Alaska with this bill in place and develop an autonomous vehicle. What if it extended the duty time? So because, I mean, what if it extended to, I think it's 8 hours from now, right? Before, I've been a long time. So, but, my point being is when we first started getting automation in airplanes and, you know, the FAA said, thou shalt not go to sleep. They said that for the longest time. And then they finally came out and called what a NASA nap, where as long as one pilot was awake, the other one could actually go to sleep for a period of time and try to refresh. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that would some sort of maybe be possible down the road and help extend the time. I mean, we have a shortage of drivers already in Alaska, like 1,000 CDL drivers short. Maybe this would help.
Through the chair, Representative McCabe. So just for clarification, the rules that I have to follow as a commercial driver, I can drive 15 hours a day. I can work 20 hours a day. I got to take 10 hours off between shifts, and I can work 80 hours in 8 days. So in order to affect that, all of those rules are set by the federal government. We can't change that in this bill. What you're talking about there, I see that as a promising possibility moving forward, but we're going to have to see something happen at the federal level to make those changes.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you for hopping in the hot seat, Senator Myers. It helps a lot. Your perspective is really valuable here. I don't see any additional questions from the committee at this time, and we were wrapping up the amount of time we had allotted for this bill as it is. So thank you to our invited testifiers. Thank you for calling Mr. Augustine, and thank you for being here, Mr. Fitzgerald, and thank you, Senator Myers. So we're going to set House Bill 217 aside. The intention from the co-chairs is to hear this again next week, so we'll try to get a couple answers to those questions before that hearing. And at this time, we are going to turn to House Bill 303 by Representative St. Clair on vehicle titling. And this is our first hearing on this legislation. So we'll have an introduction of the bill today, an opportunity for questions, and then, again, this bill will also be brought up next week. They're so soft. Do you want to feel it? Thank you, Representative St. Clair, if you want to put yourself on the record and in your presentation.
For the record, Steve St. Clair, representative to House District 26.
Okay.
Brief at ease.
Very brief at ease.
Nope, there it is.
House Transportation is back on the record, and we are now ready for House Bill 303.
Again, for the record, Steve St. Clair, House District 26. And I'm presenting House Bill 303, which is motor vehicle registration pertaining to older imported vehicles. This is a companion to Senate Bill 239, which Senator Tilton is carrying. And what I'll do is give a brief overview of the sponsor statement. The sectional is really small. And just kind of go into a real quick presentation. An act relating to the registration and titling of legally imported motor vehicles and providing for an effective date. Under federal law 49 U.S.C., vehicles that are less than 25 years old are exempt from federal motor vehicle safety standards for the purpose of importation. This rolling or standard acknowledgement acknowledges that once a vehicle is a quarter of a century old, it is considered a collector's or a classic. However, Alaska's DMV currently operates under 2 Alpha Alpha Charlie 92.020, which requires any vehicle manufactured in 1981 or newer. That's the threshold. Instead of the 25 years rolling average, it's 1981. And the sectional, real briefly, is just Section 1 requires that imported vehicles it adds a section prohibiting DMV from requiring vehicles to meet current federal motor vehicle safety standards as a condition of registration or proof, or provided the vehicle meets two criteria. One, that it is at least 25 years old, and two, that it was legally imported into the United States. This doesn't pertain to domestic vehicles. This is mainly or solely for the purpose of imported vehicles.
Couple questions. Does that conclude the presentation?
No, I haven't started the presentation, but I can start the presentation if you like.
Maybe let's go through the presentation, Representative St. Clair, and then we'll do questions.
Okay, again, background information on this, Representative Steve St. Clair, House District 26. Background is a federal law 25 years or older on a rolling average, which would mean that a vehicle that was imported and manufactured in 2001 would be eligible for this new regulation or this new statute, that it doesn't have to meet safety requirements for current vehicles. Again, only has to meet imported vehicles. Don't always have to meet federal standards. Alaska DMV regulations, and I read that earlier, is static, like I said, 1981. Alaska is a small group of states which has a strict threshold for registration of older vehicles, California, Hawaii, and Rhode Island, among others. If this legislation were to pass, it would codify a rolling 25-year average threshold, and again, that would mean a 2001 vehicle. It would eliminate unnecessary bureaucracy, and I personally like to work on old cars. And the DMV is currently working through a process or a regulation change for this, and that brings up the question then, why specifically are we carrying this legislation? Just to ensure that it happens. We'll pull the legislation when and if they pass a regulation before this passes. Wrong way. Now, a couple of pictures here. The old Toyota up in the upper left. I had one like that when I was in Arizona. I knocked the mirrors off and threw them in the back of the truck. Easy to work on. And it's an import because it was Toyota. Next one across the top is a GTR Skyline. For those Fast and Furious and street racers, they're very familiar with those and would love to get their hands on them. Then on the bottom left is an old Rolls Royce. I think it's 1929. Again, that would be a fun vehicle just to kind of mess around in. And then finally on the bottom right is a Jaguar, that James Bond looking thing. Again, this legislation would allow these because these are all actually, the Skyline, I want to say, is like a 95, and the Toyota is an 80, but it would allow these vehicles to be imported and titled and registered in the states. Questions?
Awesome. I think we have a few questions. We'll start with Representative Nelson and then McCabe.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I am in support of this, and it's not really a question as much as a comment on all of those vehicles that were just mentioned. They would, I mean, these types of vehicles are already in our state. And the way that the law was written originally, these types of vehicles have to adhere to current safety regulations. There is no rolling calendar. And so it's not a matter of, well, somebody wants to import these. These are already here, and people are already, you know, experiencing, now that this is starting to be enforced, that their vehicles are unable to be registered. They're unable to drive them. And I also have older vehicles that have experienced this as well. So it's not a matter of people wanting to do this. This is already a problem that's happening, and this seems like a simple fix to bring us in line with federal regulations. Thank you.
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So, I mean, you're ex-military. You know how many military guys are in, through the chair, sorry, Rep. Carrick. So a lot of this is focused on military guys that might bring a car over from Germany or somewhere that that they want to bring with them, or those of us that like to work on old cars. So my question is all this really does is align Alaska statute with the federal regulations and the coming state regulations. Really, I mean, it doesn't do anything else. There's no real fiscal note or anything like that, right?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, correct. This just brings Alaska online or par with federal and, like I said, the DMV, and we'll get to them in just a moment and ask them the status of it. But it's in the process right now. This is a just-in-case that they run into some problems. And it's a companion bill, and if it sits in rules until they finish it on such and such date, then so be it.
Cool. I think we should hear it and clear it.
Representative McCabe, you know how I feel about hear and clear.
Coherent objection.
We've got a couple more questions. I also wanted to note that Lauren Whiteside with the DMV is also available for questions. And I wanted to make a joke.
Oh, no.
This is probably as good a time as any to declare a conflict of interest, as I happen to be the owner of a 1971 Stingray Corvette.
So. That's domestic.
So it doesn't matter?
No, this pertains to imports only.
Okay, well, I just want to declare that I have a 1971 Stingray Corvette.
It's not a joke, it's a brag.
Humble brag.
I'm sorry, Representative Stutz, you are next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is the biggest issue the smog stuff?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, it's the smog and the EPA. I don't know if you've ever heard the term before, dirty diesel. New diesels now, you have to put DEF in your tank that kind of gets rid of the emissions and the diesel exhaust. Dirty diesels, when someone stomps on the gas, it gives a big cloud of black smoke. It would exempt vehicles 25 years or older from meeting emission standards. So it's not necessarily just smog, but it's emissions and safety standards. Some of the older vehicles also have only a lap belt instead of a chest restraint.
Follow
up? Just a comment, Madam Chair. Representative McCabe, you like this bill? Mr. Ecology Minded is what I'm thinking.
Madam Chair, if I may, if we could ask Ms. Whiteside what the status of the where they are in the process of developing this regulation.
Yes, let's ask Ms. Whiteside that question.
Thank you. This is Lauren Whiteside, Division of Motor Vehicles. Through the chair to the committee, the division actually just sent a letter to Senator Tilton letting him know we are in the process of drafting this right now. And we certainly understand the purpose of this bill, and we are working on the regulatory change right currently.
I guess I have a follow-up question for Ms. Whiteside. Does the division find it helpful to also put this in statute?
Through the chair, Chair Carrick, I think that the change through regulation would be adequate.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask that. Representative Mina?
Thank you, Co-Chair Carrick. Through the co-chair to Ms. Whiteside. So I had a friend who emailed me about this situation, and their interpretation was that the DMV started to enforce this regulation. So could you give some context for why the DMV started to enforce this, or why they weren't enforcing it before, and then how long that regulations change takes?
Certainly. Through the chair, Representative Mina, it's hard to answer to, you know, kind of a situation that someone may have encountered. I'm happy if you want to get with our team or get with me, and I can do some more in-depth research onto that and get back to you. I'm certainly happy to do that. And as far as how long the regulation will change, once we draft it and submit it through law, then we're kind of at the whim of Department of Law. And but on our end, you know, as soon as we kind of get the approvals that we need, it can be relatively fast.
Follow up. Through the co-chair to Ms. Whiteside. So by fast, how fast? And when you're talking about the, you know, it might be a case-by-case basis. So was the DMV presumably enforcing this regulation since I think the law was passed in 2006 that was related to this?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, yes. We have been enforcing this since it became effective in 2006.
Thank you. And follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, through the co-chair. And to Ms. Whiteside, when you say that the regulations change once you work with the Department of Law will be fast, what does fast mean?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, I don't want to give any sort of information that I can't confirm, but once we get the approval from Department of Law, we'll move forward with public notice and public comment period, and, you know, if there's nothing that, you know, unforeseen that comes up that would prevent that from moving forward, I like to think within, you know, within 2 to 3 months it would be possible to be passed.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative St. Clair?
Through the chair, Ms. Whiteside, that's exactly where I was going. I'm not going to hold you to a number, but historically, from start to finish, and again, not going to hold you to a definitive timeline, but historically it takes 2 to 3 months from start to finish to pass, get regulations changed within DMV.
Through the chair, I think, McCabe, I'm so sorry if that's incorrect. It can't happen yet. Like I said, there are forces outside of DMV's control that could impact moving it from start to finish, including public comment and the use of Department of Law. But it is possible to be done within that time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Whiteside. That was Representative St. Clair, just for clarification.
Apologies.
No worries. Do we have any additional questions for the bill sponsor or the DMV? Seeing none, thank you again, Ms. Whiteside and Representative St. Clair, for the presentation. It's the intention of the co-chairs to also bring this legislation back up at Tuesday next week, so our next hearing. And please work with the bill sponsor's office if you have any outstanding questions. We're fairly likely to move quickly through this bill, so please get questions answered soon. There is nothing else on the agenda today for House Transportation. Our next hearing will be on Tuesday, February 24th at 1 p.m. here in Room 124. There is no Finance Subcommittee scheduled for next week, so we will start at our regular start time. And at that hearing, we will be hearing public testimony on House Bill 217, the autonomous vehicles legislation. We will also likely bring back up House Bill 303, this one we just heard, under bills previously scheduled. And we will have a presentation from the Alaska Trucking Association as well next week. And that concludes our business for today, and we are adjourned at 2:06 p.m.